Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, remembering Harambe.
Yes. Oh,
Lord.
Rip.
Oh, Lord.
Rest in peace, Harambe.
Yes.
People really, people kind of lost their shit over that when that happened, didn't they?
Yeah.
If I remember right, it was kind of like a big deal.
And, yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. People want to fight for things, they can fight for things, I guess. As long as they do the right thing.
Yeah.
Harambe. I don't know. Harambe. So, damn it, Long, you threw me off. I was expecting you to be like, the great, say something like, this is Long the Great Caesar or something.
Yeah.
Lead a revolution.
Yes.
For more Asian power. I don't know. Oh, no. No. Anyway, how are you guys?
Good.
Good.
Yeah.
It's been a good day today.
I just saw y'all a few hours ago. We we made a rare public appearance. The trio that is the Rebel Radio Podcast is as everyone knows, the world has been flipped upside down in the last 18 months and people don't get together as much as they used to, even though they can to an extent if they're vaccinated and are careful with things. But it's just people aren't quite ready to fully, go back to how it used to be for good reasons.
They're not ready to take the rubber off,
But yet, if you turn on college football at all today, the stadiums are quite full. So, I don't know. We'll see, but we were able to get together for just the third time this year, really, we all got together in person. Yeah. And we had kind of casually talked about getting back and recording in person again, but now this Delta variant has hit and things are getting rough again. So we're still doing it the, digital way, which is fine too. But, it was good to see you guys today. And, I've seen you guys on and off a couple times, but the three of us hanging out, just the third time this year. So,
it was cool, man.
For Long's birthday earlier this year, then at Comicpalooza. And, it was kind of an early celebration for your birthday, which is next week, Matt, today.
Yeah.
So it was cool. I enjoyed my peace and quiet for the 6 hours or so we were gone. And since I've been home, it's been, the typical chaos, and I'm like, God, can I go back to hanging out with Matt Long? It was quiet.
Yeah, much quieter.
It's like when we're hanging out and stuff, and we have a moment of just like no one's saying anything, no one says anything because we all realize like, oh, it's okay. We don't have to be talking all the time. Sometimes those moments of peace and zen are good, just staying out with the boys.
Just being there, man.
But no, it was nice after the first couple weeks of school starting, and it's been very busy. Because as me, it's like in the summertime, I'm home at 2:30, and the kids are home, and you're home for the day. Now all of a sudden, I basically have like 3 hours extra a day added to my schedule with picking them up and stuff, and that's not a complaint because I'll do it 100% every day for them, but it's. It's an adjustment for dad too. I'm a little tired these first couple weeks of school starting, So it was definitely nice to hang out and we'll talk about that here in a minute. What we went and did today, saw a little Marvel movie that came out in theaters so it was fun, but I guess we can get right into it. I mean, there's not a whole lot more to talk about. It's been, not much exciting has happened in the last week. Cause we recorded Sunday morning last week. Been kind of a short week in a way for recording, and it was just pretty much a pedestrian normal week this week. Work, school, work. So not much exciting happened. So let's get into Download This, where we tell people what we watched, streamed, checked out this week, and we all went and saw the same movie today. We'll talk about that in a minute, but if there's anything that anybody wanted to add to the table they watched this week or played, they can do so.
I'll go. Long always goes. I'll go this time. Watched the whole Rise trilogy, just wanted to re-remind myself at the whole story. It was still fairly fresh in my brain, but, wanted to see it again. And good trilogy. Looks good. Also watched Planet of the Apes, just because, got my oldest indoctrinated into it, that way he is aware of the significance of it at least, because, there's sometimes you see those references, I don't know if I off the top of my head, I guess, the damn you all the hell, or,
Oh, you talking about the original?
Yeah, the original, with Charlton Heston. And, I was asking him, I was like, I said, it's supposed to make you think from a different perspective. What if, roles were flipped, and what if you were, treated that way, and, how would you feel? And he was like, oh yeah, that's a good point. Other than that, Mark had given me the heads up that Paramount Plus was 1 week free and $5 a month. So, I got home, and a little after that, the, kids and I watched the Paw Patrol movie, and that was it.
I apologize in advance that you had to. Yeah. It's been on my TV about 7 times in the last 10 days.
Where everybody wants and I to started watch it cleaning. A lot. Yeah. I was like, oh, I got to clean and make pizza.
It's like very kidding. When you have kids. We have kids. I mean, you don't mind watching, kid flicks, most Disney stuff and Pixar and maybe SpongeBob or a few things, but then there are some things that are just so below my level. It's like, no, I'm not sitting and watching this. Paw Patrol is one of those.
No, can't do this.
And nothing against Paw Patrol. It's a great cartoon for kids, but it's like, nah, I'm not doing this. And it was their biggest adventure yet.
Yep.
That's what I got told by my 4-year-old. She's like, it's their biggest adventure yet.
That sounds like a critic, like a critic for Rolling Stone, That's in his future. He's going to be the one line headlines.
I'm going to try to sit down on. I saw A Quiet Place Part 2 is on there. I definitely want to sit down and watch that in the next.
Yes.
While I have Paramount Plus again, because I wanted to see that.
But yeah, that was about it.
For me, it's another week of Final Fantasy. That's about it. I'm just going through the epilogue of Shadowbringers. And nothing to report there. That's all I've been doing on whatever spare time I've had. Unless you want to hear me trying to mow the lawn, but... That's about it. And then
the
movie
sound?
That we watched earlier today. I'll wait till Mark finishes due on his download this.
I mean, I didn't watch a whole lot this week. About three more episodes of Titans. I've got 2 left on the first season. Continues to be a much better show than I expected to be. Like I said before, definitely a cool take on the Teen Titans mythologies. I recommend watching it. If you get a chance, what did I watch? I wanted to say there was something I was watching on Hulu or one of the other fucking multiple damn streaming services I have. But I definitely know I watched Titans, and that's all I remember watching besides today's featured film. And then the movie we all saw in theaters today. I mean, let's get into that. I mean, because there's some stuff to talk about in this movie. Of course, Marvel. The whole world's been put on hold in theaters and stuff, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe in that sense has been put on hold a bit, and Disney is trying to get things rolling again by putting Black Widow out in back in early July on streaming services and in theaters. And now this weekend, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings hit theaters, and theaters only, so it's not a hybrid release. So the three of us got together this afternoon and went and saw this movie, and I feel kind of bad that all these years I had called the character Shang-Chi because that's how I'd heard it announced by other people. And Marvel and Disney pretty much said, no, fuck y'all, y'all are all saying it wrong. It's Shang-Chi. Well, God, I hope they forgive us, because I think everyone was saying Chang all these years. And yeah. I legit felt kind of bad when I heard that in the movie. I'm like, damn, I've been calling it the wrong name all these years?
Yeah, I was surprised too. I'd been pronouncing it wrong myself, got corrected. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy that it wasn't released on Disney Plus. You know, I was expecting it to be released then. In fact, I had forgotten what movie we were going to go see. I was like, what are we seeing this weekend? You know, because I'm used to seeing stuff like, you know, coming soon. You know, and I was like, are we going to go see Free Guy? And then I was looking, I was like, oh, no, we're going to go see, we're going to go see Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Yep. Personally, I thought this was a very good... I thoroughly enjoyed this movie from beginning to end, and I was really impressed with Hollywood's first ever kung fu fantasy movie.
Yeah,
mainstream kung fu fantasy movie, usually in the realm of Hong Kong cinema or Chinese cinema, but very good movie, I have to say, and I'm glad that Marvel took the risk of adapting this character to the big screen. It's like, I don't know, people could be cynical about it and say, oh, they're just doing it for the Chinese market. That's why they're making this movie. It's not really for the American audience or something like that, but no.
It's definitely a deep cut for a Marvel character. I mean, there was a time in which this character had its run in the 70s, and they were playing off the Bruce Lee films or martial arts movies at the time. But it was never a huge mainstream Marvel hit, you know. So it's definitely maybe a deeper cut than even the Guardians of the Galaxy being made into a film.
Yeah,
that's fair. That's a fair comparison, because I know I didn't ever hear about Shang-Chi, but you know, I wasn't reading comics at that time. You know, when I was reading comics, I think Venom had gotten popular and Spider-Man was still going strong. And what else was I think I was reading that, and then I read a little bit of Fantastic Four, but I hadn't heard Shang-Chi.
No, neither have I. I assume this character was created during the martial arts craze of the 70s. Martial arts movies became a popular thing for a couple of years in the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. So I mean, freaking even Wonder Woman was turned into a kung fu character during that time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She lost all her powers and started doing martial arts in the mid-70s. You know, there was a time in that it permeated all of pop culture, thanks to Bruce Lee and all.
I wonder if that's how, Hawkeye became Ronin, you know, because there was that little time where he started training with Captain America, and he started.
Oh yeah, but that was done way years after the martial arts craze.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a real recent thing. That was a few years ago in the New Avengers comics. That's not even that old.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's pretty recent. The Ronin thing is pretty recent.
But yeah, the movie itself, a very good villain. I've been watching some reviews on the movie, and a lot of people were really impressed with Tony Leung, his performance as Wenwu, the main villain. Very nuanced performance, and a very sympathetic villain. And you can relate to him as a father or widower, you know? So, I guess the two fathers can attest whether they can relate to the guy's motivations better than I can. How about your perspectives?
Yeah, I thought he was a good villain. He still fell into that trope of, you know, villains wanting ultimate power, and if, you know, it was a little bit different in his case. It's like he wanted to use his power to bring his wife back, which he didn't, you know, couldn't see through that it wasn't true. Mm-hmm. So he fought with that. But overall, yeah, it was a great performance by Tony, and And it did give the movie an emotional core, you know, because you could be sympathetic to him as a villain, yeah. But you also, I think, lean more towards your sympathies towards Dor Shang and his sister, because, you know, I think their stories were a little more relatable, as everything they had to go through is that their father pushed them through and forced them to be part of the Ten Rings army and all these years. So I think you've still fell to their side more, but you could definitely sympathize with the villain as well. And I thought that one thing I really noticed about this movie is that the title of the film is, of course, Shang-Chi, and he's the main character. But I thought this movie did a really well done job of balancing all the characters. And so much to the point that it was almost an ensemble film, that it wasn't just about Shang. You know, he was the core of the story. But I thought this movie did a really good job of that, giving everybody a part to play in the film. And there was an emotional core to a lot of the characters in the film, which I thought was well done.
Yeah. I do feel like that's a good point. It utilizes a lot of the characters in it. See some familiar faces in the film. So, that's mm-hmm. cool. And, felt like the villain kind of righted himself for a short time and then ultimately, you know, got steered in the wrong direction again.
He goes from bad to good to bad to good to bad to good a few times in this film. Yeah.
Like a light switch.
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's definitely better than I thought it was going to be. You know, I mean, I thought it looked good. You know, this is a really good Marvel film. This is, I feel like, at least in the top 10 of Marvel films, if we can fit it in there, you know. I might have to do some rethinking, but I think there's at least room to put it in like top 7, you know, maybe.
Very, very, very good martial arts scenes too. Yeah. The action sequences, the fight scenes,
mm-hmm.
easy to watch, easy to follow.
I really like the scaffold scene. I thought that was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, the scaffold scene, the bus scene was really good too.
Oh yeah.
It lost a little bit of that, you know, kung fu edge by the end of the movie. Not because it was like, it was a CGI battle.
Well, yeah, it became less about the, it became less about the martial arts of the film, and it became more of the
fantasy.
Your typical action set piece fantasy. Yeah. And maybe a little spoiler territory here, but one thing I thought was cool about those last 20 minutes of the film or so was that, they pretty much showed none of that in the trailers. And I thought like that was nice to go into a movie, and it felt very fresh because they didn't show everything in the trailer. I mean, there was almost nothing from the last 20 minutes that I remember seeing in the trailers for the film, and some nice fantasy style surprises at the end of the movie with battling dragons and stuff, which is a little bit spoiler territory there. But you know, we're reviewing a movie, so you know, spoilers might happen.
When I get kaiju action in the movie, I'm happy.
Kaijus.
Yeah. Man, if I was a kid watching this film, man, it would just blow my mind. You know? Mm-hmm. Oh wow, a kung fu movie and giant monster battle. You know?
Yep.
It'll be hog heaven. And yeah. I think I was pretty much smiling from ear to ear watching this film.
It's thoroughly entertaining. It's It, you know, sometimes I'll harp on Marvel and their jokes in movies, but this one I thought was had some few lighthearted, funny moments, and they didn't feel out of place to me. They didn't feel forced. You know, I thought they did a good job with that. It's well acted throughout the film.
Didn't ruin any moments either.
No, the jokes didn't ruin moments. The jokes were well placed. It's always a delight to see Michelle Yeoh. You know, she's always great on screen. The lead actor, Simolu, is that how you say it? He's really good. You know, he's charismatic. You know, he played the part well, and I look forward to seeing him in more Marvel films. You know, because obviously with the post credit scenes, we know we haven't seen the last of him. Awkwafina, her character Katie, she could have been easily written as one of those annoying sidekick characters, but it's almost like the writers and the director knew how to use her, where it was just enough that you appreciated her. Because that's one of those characters that could have easily been written to that annoying sidekick part, but they didn't with her. She was just enough you know, and I thought that was good. And that's what I said earlier about it being such an ensemble picture where everyone has a part to play, and it doesn't just focus the entire story around Sean, and it has others, you know, elements to make it work. I did think the scene where she calls him out on his name change was pretty funny. It's like, you go to Heidi, you only drop one letter off your name.
That was good.
No wonder your dad found you.
Yeah.
I still hate the Eagles, by the way. So, dang. Not a big fan of the Eagles.
You know, that's like the number one selling solo, like single ever.
I don't like California. Yeah, I'm not an Eagles guy either.
Dang.
I find them to be a very boring band.
Very overrated.
I've never understood the huge appeal of them. That's like my grandpa's music. It's, you know.
Yep.
It's boring.
Yeah. Yep. Don't worry. It's a Gen X thing, Matt. You'll never understand.
Same reason why
Gen X doesn't like MASH. We don't like MASH either. I don't know anybody in my age group that likes that TV show, MASH.
What about the show that came on after MASH?
I have no idea.
The show with Jimmy Farr?
Huh? I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't either.
Okay, no. Boomer.
Matt, I don't dig the Eagles. Give me some Led Zeppelin or something over the Eagles.
Man.
Yeah.
No.
Pretty much.
No. But anyway, but overall, man, I enjoyed the hell out of watching this film today.
The Carpenters had more enjoyable music.
Yeah.
Watching with my boys.
Rainy days and Mondays always get you down.
Yeah.
Having a good lunch afterwards. But it was fun. That's the first movie I had seen, a new movie, since I took the kids to see Sonic. I did go see Empire Strikes Back on the big screen last year, but I hadn't been to the theater to see something new in quite some time. So it's always, you know, movie theater going experience. You can't top it. You know, it's always going to be the best way to see a film.
I
will probably venture out here in a few weeks and try to see No Time to Die when it comes out. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
same here.
But it was fun watching Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. You know. Get back to the MCU and see where they go next with it all. And I'm going to call it now, and I think they're going to go Galacticus and then possibly the Beyonder if they really are doing a Secret Wars storyline like Jim Shooter believes they are. So we'll see, since he basically sold them the right to Secret Wars.
Yeah,
I want to read Secret Wars, but god dang, the trade paperback is like $32. I'm like, that's I know it's 12 issues, but I'm like, that's an expensive trade paperback.
I don't know how they're going to do the Secret Wars. They keep killing off villains.
I read a few series of Secret Avengers, and they basically
that has nothing to do with Secret Wars. No.
Oh, okay.
Secret Wars is back in the 80s, man. That keeps bringing up all this recent stuff. Like Ronin is literally like maybe a 7 or 8 year old character. Has nothing to do with the Kung Fu's from the 70s and all that.
I think Secret Wars was like late 90s or early 2000s, you know?
You have to go back further.
Go back further. Yeah.
Before your time, Matt.
They did
a modern Secret Wars too, but the one Jim Shooter wrote was back in the late 80s.
Yeah, the first iteration. Yeah, the concept of Secret Wars, it was like the first mega event for comic books.
The black costume.
Yeah, the black Spider-Man costume.
Yeah.
And it was like all heroes of the Marvel Universe versus all the villains in the Marvel Universe. That was the concept. The Beyonder transports these heroes onto a planet, and the heroes and villains have to fight each other. And what's funny was, you know, that's why I keep commenting, well, they can't have the Secret Wars when they keep killing off their villains, right? Right. So,
yeah.
Unless they do it the modern version, which is a weird Secret Wars thing. I didn't understand that concept. It was a bunch of alternate universes. Maybe they're going for that. Who knows?
Yeah, you're right. 2010 was Secret Avengers.
I would love to see the Captain America Secret Wars storyline where Captain America goes to Planet Hulk. And his companion was a was Devil Dinosaur, Red T-Rex.
Yeah.
You know, it was a sentient T-Rex. It was Captain America and the Red T-Rex trying to survive at Planet Hulk.
Didn't Chris Evans even mention that, I think, at one time? He said, if they ever do a Planet Hulk, I better get the dinosaur with me. I remember it was, I think it was Evans yeah. somebody mentioned that. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. That would be so awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, it was cool. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings playing in theaters now. Wait, sorry, Shang-Chi. Now that I know how to correctly say it, I don't want to be
how about y'all, white guy that can't say things properly. Rate it.
Oh, I give it a pretty solid A. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
A.
You know.
A, man.
Yeah, A. Yeah, same here.
It felt
a
like
A for Asian.
A for Asian?
Well, real quick, and then we'll get into today's featured film, is Black Widow. Black Widow I enjoyed, but it felt like the same old MCU, if that makes sense. Walking out of theater today, I felt a little refreshed in the MCU. I felt like, okay, we're headed to some new ideas. And I think that's why it works. Because even Falcon, Winter Soldier, and WandaVision, I know I haven't finished Loki yet, even they felt like the same old MCU. You know, this film made me feel like, okay, we're moving things forward with some new ideas. And I'm excited to see where it goes. So,
yeah.
And so it was cool. So that brings us to today's feature film then. Man, it's – I just – obviously, we all know we're getting older, but I'm shocked that it's been 10 years since this movie came out. And I saw this at the Showboat Drive-In out in Ockley, I remember. And this was a movie that, as a longtime Planet of the Apes fan, at this point, we had only had the Mark Wahlberg film, which, you know, I'm not going to knock it here on the show. There's things I like about that film, and there's things I don't. But when I had heard that they were rebooting the Planet of the Apes franchise, I was skeptical. You know, there's a director named Rupert Wyatt I hadn't really heard of. And then starring James Franco, and I'm kind of like, yeah, okay, this guy's known for stoner movies or whatever. And then the trailers came out for this movie, and I was like, okay, it looks interesting. And I decided, you know, I'm going to see it because I'm a Planet of the Apes fan. And I went into this really with just no expectations. I was like, there's just no way. I kind of went into a little bit negative thinking, oh, it's not going to be good, you know. And I walked drove out of the theater that day and was truly blown away. And that is Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And this, to start off, this is a really good fucking movie. Let's just be honest about it. It's a movie that y'all probably had the same feeling, went into it with kind of lower expectations, not knowing what to think from a reboot of it, and walked out of it extremely satisfied and wanted to see what would happen next. And that's my initial reactions when I first saw this film. I was like, wow, that's way better than I ever thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was, when that movie came out, I kind of poo-pooed on it because, like, ooh, a reboot. You know, because during that time, I mean, there was a ton of reboots coming out,
mm-hmm.
like RoboCop reboot, Total Recall reboot.
Yeah, there was a lot.
And there was a lot that year. And I was like, man, they're going crazy. And I started hating on them a lot. And unfortunately, I kind of lumped it, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And a little brief summary. So Planet of the Apes is basically about how they're... medical pharmaceutical companies trying to find a cure for Alzheimer's, and I guess they got a secret batch and used it on the monkey. Sorry, not monkey, on the chimpanzee.
Bright eyes.
And Caesar got the experimental medicine, and I believe they boosted it further.
Yes, on the other apes.
When they Caesar gets it passed on to him when he was born. Because he was... Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Because his mother had the... Was the first test subject. Anyways, he gets brought home by James Franco's character. Oh, that was another reason why I didn't want to watch it. I did not So they raise him, and then they couldn't raise him after an incident with a neighbor or so. because John Lithgow's character was developing dementia and Alzheimer's.
He was being treated by the X-12, but he developed a strain of antibodies which counteracted the treatment. So, you know, he reveals, you know, that's whenever he reveals that revelation to his boss.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyways, Caesar gets put into a holding pen with other apes. And, of course, they eventually escape, run amok, Golden Gate Bridge, trying to get into the Sequoia National Park in order to raise their own little cobble of smart apes. And the end.
Long. That summary sucked.
I know.
So you missed the, there was a good part you alluded to, but you didn't finish. So he goes to his boss.
A summary is a summary. I don't have to give away the whole movie.
Well, you know, the way it starts affecting humans, you know, you almost got there. I felt like that was the last. I think that's the cool part. You find out how humans are, you know, dematerializing, degenerating mentally, and you know, through the sickness that is created through this more aggressive virus strain that James Franco tells his boss he needs to reduce so that it can get past these antibodies, get the product faster into the cells so that it bypasses the antibody aspect of the human immune system. And, you know, what it gets airborne, it affects one employee, and then that employee affects the pilot, and then the pilot goes to the airport, and then boom, we know it spreads. And I thought that part was really cool. Just like, cause you have an answer, you know, cause you watch the original series, and you know, Mark gave me his copies cause he had upgraded to Blu-ray. So thank you, Mark. I have the DVDs, thanks to that. And, you know, watching, you know, that first movie, Planet of the Apes, you're like, man, how did this happen? Cause, you know, even Heston, he's in the film. He's like, you know, how did this upside down world come to be, you know? And you get that answer, you know, and that's what I like about this film. I know it exists outside of that film, you know, or it's supposed to, but it's cool getting that answer, you know, or that reason.
Right. I feel like this movie, like we were talking earlier, I feel like this movie, it alludes to being a prequel to the original, but I also think they exist in their own world. I think they like to throw some of that stuff in there for Easter eggs and things like that, because I feel they were trying to find their own universe with this trilogy as it went along. And but this movie does give us a look as to how it all could have possibly started. You know, like you said, with the human virus and the revolution of the apes, who essentially Caesar, you know, as he is taken away from Will and put into captivity, he just sees the how humans are, essentially, you know, and the way they treat him, and he ends up not having a trust for humans, and even feels a little bit that Will even betrayed him, I think, because he didn't get him out of the sanctuary, but yet he realized that Will was ultimately a good person, and Caesar knows it's up to him to basically help free all of his kind, and that's what he does. You know, Tom Felton, who played, you know, is known for the Harry Potter movies, plays a little evil son of a bitch in there, and he gets what's coming to him, deservedly so, after treating the apes like trash. And
like a Julius from the first Planet of the Apes. He's where he abuses Charlton Heston's character. You know, he abuses Caesar with
the water hose. out of all three films in the trilogy, this is definitely the one that has the most callbacks to the original films, you know, and of course, Caesar is the name of the son of Cornelius and Zira in the original film. In the original films, they named him Caesar. Yeah. So in this movie, he is named Caesar through Will's father, played by the always great John Lithgow, has Alzheimer's, and that's why Will's doing all this. He's trying to save his dad, and his dad names him Caesar, you know, in the film, and Caesar does everything he can to protect him and everything. That's how he gets in trouble and gets put in the sanctuary, by trying to protect Will's father. You know, so I think the great thing about this movie is, first off, the mocap work by Andy Serkis is remarkable. And the work by Industrial Light and Magic and everything, bringing these apes to life is, some of the best CGI work seen on film in the last, you know, 30 years since CGI has become a normal thing. This has some remarkable work in it. And, but the story is also very humanized by, you kind of sympathize with Will, what he's doing, even if he's not necessarily doing it legally, trying to save his dad. And then his boss is kind of, at first his boss is kind of like, he ruins the project, but then he trusts in Will that it's working, but then he kind of still turns a Will. And of course he gets what's coming to him too, when all the apes attack him at the end of the film. Cause Caesar definitely shows no mercy for the people that mistreated him and his kind in this film. And it's portrayed by just fantastic CGI work and mocap, and the way the animators capture the looks on Caesar's face. He's truly a living character in this film, and it's amazing work.
Yeah.
I was amazed by, it was seamless. It's definitely one of the few movies where I felt like I'm focused on the character and I'm not thinking about the visual effects at all.
Right.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. And I felt like the CGI was okay. Like you said, Mark, you had talked about it earlier. We probably needs an update, to make it a little smoother.
It gets better as the trilogy goes along. They had this out of the three films, this had the lowest budget of the three. So you got to think about that too.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. But it's just cool how he leads the revolution and, how he speaks, that's another, callback. And then we see the lost spaceship in space on the newspaper. Whenever Franco goes outside and grabs a newspaper and he puts it on the table and you get a little glimpse of it and it says, lost in space or something like that. And it's the shuttle that went off earlier in the film. So it's like, whose spaceship is that? Is that Charlton Heston's? Is it someone else's that we don't know, we haven't touched that part of the universe yet? Is it Mark Wahlberg's? Who knows? But callbacks.
Again, I think they're just nods to the original films.
Yeah. I feel like you feel more sorry. I feel more sorry for Charlton Heston than I do Caesar, but they didn't focus a whole lot on the abuse part. It was definitely there, and you definitely hated the Draco Malfoy actor. I feel like I guess they had to get the virus stuff explained, the medicine and James Franco story. It was an honest mistake. It's crazy that he was just trying to help his dad and ended up declining the human race.
I don't think they were getting you to feel sympathetic though for Caesar. I think that as a human watching it, you understood that enough was enough and you understood why Caesar was pissed off,
Yeah.
I don't feel like they were trying to make him sympathetic. I think you going into the movie, you knew what was going to happen. You knew that he was going to start this revolution. So I think that, that was the whole point. Not necessarily to feel sorry for Caesar, but yeah, because it's a different character than dealing with in the original film, dealing with Charlton's character. You're always going to sympathize a little more with the human, I guess, in that film because of the way that story was told compared to this one. Because I think in this movie, you knew that Caesar was going to kick some ass eventually. moviegoers in 1968 might have really thought that, wow, Charlton Heston's captured. What's going to happen? Things were just. Movie going experiences were a little different then compared to now. Audiences are smarter, I guess, more in tune with what's going on as far as storytelling is told, I think.
Yeah, this movie rewards your patience.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say. I didn't watch this movie until the whole reboot craze died down years later. And I watched it I watched this movie first, thankfully, and then I watched Dawn next, and then after that, War in the theaters. So,
yeah.
What?
You're absolutely right what you were saying earlier. I remember talking to people when this came out, and a lot of people had that feeling like, oh, another reboot, another reboot. And I remember selling this movie to people and telling them, like, no, you've got to watch this. It's not RoboCop and some of the other films that are out. This is a legitimately a really good film. I remember trying to convince people to see this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
Reboot fatigue.
I was one of those because you were talking about Dawn, and I was like, oh, I was like, what's that? And you're like, you didn't see the first one? And because you were talking about how Dawn is like one of the best sequels of recent at the time. And you're like, oh, you need to watch it. You need to get up on and watch it because they're already making the third film. And you know that way, by the time you watch the first and the second, you know, you're not too far behind when the third comes out. And I remember it being good, you know. And, you know, watching it again, it's still good. Still, you know, solid, you know, the way that they handled it, of course.
Yeah, the last, you know, last 30 minutes of this movie are fantastic when the revolution starts and they escape the sanctuary and they go across San Francisco, getting to the bridge, wanting to get to the Redwood Forest. And it's some really great filmmaking with some great action sequences where the one gorilla attacks the helicopter, you know, and then that's whenever Will's boss is caught in the helicopter and Caesar staring him down and he lets Koba, I think it's Koba, and says, nah, you can take care of him. And, you know, and they ultimately, you know, are getting punishing these humans that did these things to them. And it's a remarkable sequence towards the end of the film, you know. And of course they get to the forest at the end of the movie and when Will is there and he tells Caesar, you know, like, you got to stop doing this. You got to come home. And, you know, he talks to Will for the first time and says, Caesar is home. And, you know, it's a great moment in the movie, you know, when that happens and it ends with them in the Redwood Forest. And then, of course, the pilots in a little mini post-credit scene, the pilots going through the airport, spitting up blood. And if you pay attention to the closing credits of this movie, they give you a lot of hints of the futures that shows the virus spreading across the world in the credits at the end of this film. And at that point, we didn't even know if we'd get a sequel. You know, Fox put this out not knowing how successful it would be, and it was very successful. And they came back to do Dawn of the Planet of the Apes with Matt Reeves directing because you know, unfortunately, Rupert Wyatt has talked about it before. The studio, I guess, I don't know if they just didn't believe in him because he hadn't made a lot of films, and they moved on from him. And Rupert has talked before. He goes, I don't know why they didn't ask me to make a sequel. I just was never asked. So they moved on to Matt Reeves to do the sequel. And you know, Matt. Of course, Matt's films are both very good, and I have faith after watching this that Rupert probably would have made a couple of good sequels as well, but it didn't turn out that way. And so, you know, but he gave us a start to this reboot franchise, and it's a hell of a good start.
Yeah. Some big development, you know, developing Caesar's compassion, you know, something that his parents in the third film, the second sequel that came out, you know, had Cornelius, and they were always sympathetic to humans.
What's amazing is, you know, Andy Serkis was reluctant to do this at first. You know, he had just made King Kong a few years earlier, and he's like, man, I, you know, he wasn't sure if he really wanted to make another movie where he was playing an ape, but he sat down and he really thought about it, and they convinced him to do it, and he brought this character to life in a hell of a good way for three films. So I'm glad that he did it because he truly, like, they, you know, a lot of the animators use his face and his things to capture his emotions, and it comes out on the screen on Caesar, you know, for sure.
Oh yeah. So, yeah. No, he,
I mean, there's,
yeah.
The one scene where he's in the cage and he's just staring down, you know, Felton and all that, and he's like looking back and forth, you know, thinking about his next move. Wyatt walks into the room when that's going on. He's like, oh, is he a bad ape? He looks scary. And I was like, well, he's not really a bad ape. He's just very intimidating, you know, and that's, and they did a great job of doing that in the film. But I think this movie's a pretty solid A. You know, I like it. And that says a lot because the trilogy gets better as it goes along. Dawn is fantastic. Middle film. War is fantastic. Those movies are probably both A pluses compared to this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But this is definitely a good. I think this movie is definitely a good start. I think the first maybe 30 minutes of it is probably the only thing that keeps it from being A plus. It starts out, it's a little bit slow to start, you know, but once it gets going, once they put Caesar in the sanctuary, it really starts rolling and it becomes a really remarkable film for the last hour or 15 minutes or so. The first 30 minutes, probably the only thing that holds it back a little bit, but you got to set up the story, you know, can't always jump right into it.
Yeah.
So, good stuff.
Yeah, laid a solid foundation for movies to come.
Exactly. So, you know, but 10 years, man, since this trilogy rebooted and got started, and I'm glad they did this. And I hope that, you know, Disney, and before we get into the top five, I do, you know, at the end of War for the Planet of the Apes, you know, of course, this is a little bit of a spoiler, and we may talk some more about this in our top five. You know, Caesar eventually frees all the apes from the humans, and he gets them to us. You know, a safe home before he ultimately passes away. And, you know, I would imagine that the story that they could continue on would be with his son, continue to lead the revolution. And of course they allude to other ape factions being out there. And, hopefully Fox, continues this franchise with a fourth film. I don't think it needs another reboot. I think that it's still soon enough after this last one that they can, maybe continue this franchise with some further films. I'd like to see that. We'll see what happens. But that brings us into the top five this week. And it is, we're going to look back on our top five favorite moments from the modern Rise of the Planet of the Apes trilogy. And I don't know. I guess I can start. Or does anybody else want to start?
I'll start.
Oh. You want to start? You can start.
Sure.
So, I'll go in the middle this week. I hardly ever go in the middle.
Yeah. So number five for me is in War Planet of the Apes, whenever Caesar's basically showing how smart he is. He's talking to Woody Harrelson's character, the Colonel, and he's like, you know, explaining like how he saw his men, you know, saw his men out in the snow, and like, what did he do to them? You know, he could tell that he killed his own men, and he's like, wow. He's like, they said you were smart, but, you know, I didn't know you were that smart. And then he goes on even further and basically unveils his plan. And he's just like really impressed. But, you know, of course, you know, they're, you know, they keep him chained down and working in the compound so that he, isn't too close to the Colonel. Can't take him out. But I thought that was a cool part, just that, you know, he had evolved by the third film and could reason.
My number five is, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is when Koba approaches the two men that are drinking with the guns and everything. And we saw this scene in the trailers for the movie. We knew it was going to happen. But it's the first moment in the entire trilogy where it's kind of chilling because you realize that not every ape is good like Caesar. You know, that there's really bad apes out there, too. And from that point on, Koba becomes, you know, Caesar's enemy. You know, and so it's for the first time in the trilogy where it's not just the humans are evil to the apes. It's also there's some evil apes, too. And that's a true turning point in the trilogy is when we realize that Koba's not the good ape like the rest of them.
Nope.
One of the best villains of recent movie history, too.
Yeah.
To say.
Yeah.
Because you see Koba in the first movie as well.
Yes.
Yeah. He looks creepy, man. He just looks creepy.
What's funny is that species of apes are generally the most friendly, but yet he's evil in the movie.
That's funny.
Right. A little fun fact about Koba, Toby Kibble, who played Koba as a, you know, mocap actor and actor. He also played the Kong in Kong Skull Island.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So that's Toby Kibble. That's also Kong.
No. So,
my number five is when Caesar says no.
Oh, back to me.
To Draco Malfoy in Rise of the Planet of the Apes when he finally stood up for himself.
Yeah.
And that was the start of the mark of the, you know, ape independence
mm-hmm.
and free will. That's my number five. Caesar Says No from Rise.
Nice. Yeah. Number four for me, Caesar takes out his abuser. He fucks him up. He gets shocked. He gets what's coming to him. You know, just he deserved it. I'm glad that he, you know, Avada Kedavra'd him.
What?
You know, Harry Potter, Avada Kedavra. It's the spell. Oh, it's like an instant kill spell.
That's a deep cut, man.
Yeah, deep cut. Yeah, deep cut.
At number four, I have in War for the Planet of the Apes the ultimate final battle, and where Caesar comes across the courtyard and he's carrying the grenades and he's trying to save his own kind, and you know it's a cool moment where you find yourself rooting for Caesar at this point. Like you said, you know, you're not so much sympathetic in the first film, but by the time you get to War for the Planet of the Apes, you're definitely sympathetic with Caesar, and you hate Woody Harrelson's character so much that you want him to die. So when he's coming across that courtyard to save everybody, you know, you're rooting for Caesar all the way, and it's a great sequence of events in that movie.
Yippers.
Yep.
My number four is when the apes come across the little girl who was who survived the new mutation of the virus, who became mute. And there's just, I forgot the name of the orangutan. What's her name?
Maurice.
Maurice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maurice, basically taking the little girl under, I don't know if it's a he or she. Sometimes I supposed to be a male or female. But
it's played by a female.
Yeah.
Mocap actors. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, Maurice takes little girl under her wing, so to speak. It's a nice, tender moment. Plus meeting Zeke for the first time from War of the Planet of the Apes, kind of a comic relief. Because that was a pretty dark movie. Pretty heavy Bad movie. Ape. So
he called himself Bad Ape.
Oh, yeah. Bad Ape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Played by Steve Zahn.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. Number four.
Now, I've got the for three, I've got the same one that you had at number four, Mark. The that battle between where the, you know, Caesar's trying to fight the Colonel's army. The Colonel, of course, has just succumbed to you know, the disease, the, you know, rapid response of the disease degenerating the human brain, making them basically beast-like. And, you know, he grabs that belt of grenades and, you know, blows the natural gas tank or whatever. And then the other army wins, but then the avalanche comes. I think that whole sequence is pretty cool. Yeah. You have that one ape named Donkey that turns on the soldiers and helps out Caesar.
Hmm. At number three, I have the revolution on the bridge at the end of this movie that we cover today. I think it's really well shot. It's just it's important to what happens in the later on films, because the revolution has begun and the rise of the Planet of the Apes has begun with that sequence on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Nice.
Yeah, my number three is the same, the Golden Gate Bridge battle.
You were looking at my list, weren't you?
No.
Number two for me, it's the ape army versus the humans in Dawn. Where the, you know, Gary Oldman's like, all right, we're just going to shoot these guys. Oh shit, they have guns, and they're just like unloading, and he's like, what the fuck, you know? And you're just like, oh my god, they can handle guns. This is scary. This ain't going to be a pushover.
Of course, right. Matt goes with guns.
Yep, apes with guns.
At my number two, I have the end of the trilogy, man. When they arrive at the their new home after the battle with the general and everything in War for Planet of the Apes, and Caesar gets to look out on his family and his apes and sees that they're safe, and you know, he's able to be at peace knowing that he saved his kind through even if it cost him his own life.
My number two is when Koba takes commandeers a tank and it comes in that wonderful POV sequence of him shooting up the compound, the human compound, in the middle of a battle. It was very well done, very creative camera work, and a very, very unforgettable moment for me.
That was in the second one, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. From Dawn. Yeah. Koba commandeers tank. Yeah.
Number one, I've got when Caesar says no and just freaks the shit out of all the two caretakers there. And, you know, and then that's when the apes really, really, really start following him. And then he, of course, leads them out onto their, their jailbreak into the forest.
My number one is, I think, a little bit more important speaking line than that. That's not important, but it's at the end of the film where he tells Will Caesar is home. Because, that's the beginning of it all right there. I mean, I think that's the most important movie in the moment in the entire trilogy for me. In a trilogy full of great moments. Like, we didn't even talk, Dawn sometimes in this trilogy is forgotten about, which middle movies tend to be in a lot of trilogies. Unless you're the Empire Strikes Back, but I forget about the whole battle in the scaffold in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That's pretty freaking spectacular too. Where Caesar's trying to save his kind on that battle. So, but number one is when he says Caesar is home.
Well, my number one pick that sparked the whole ape revolution was the death of Harambe in 2000.
Shut the front door.
Harambe forever.
Harambe. Poor Harambe. Anyways. All right. Number one, my absolute unforgettable moment, favorite moment from the trilogy reboot is the final moments of Woody Harrelson's character. It is the biggest, I felt, character resolution for the trilogy for Caesar, mm-hmm. where in a way the general was afflicted. Was it a general or colonel?
Colonel.
He was a colonel.
The colonel.
He was colonel.
Yeah, the colonel was afflicted with this degenerative disease, and he wanted Caesar to pull the trigger. But after all the pain and misery that the general has caused Caesar would not give the general an easy way out.
Right.
And it ultimately shows that who's the savage, was the Caesar mm-hmm. or the colonel. And yeah, so he wasn't, Caesar wasn't going to give him an easy way out, and I thought it was a very powerful moment. No words were exchanged either, which is brilliant too.
Yeah. Matt Reeves all direction.
Visual.
Reeves' direction on those two films was really good. How about Woody, man? Did Woody have issues like some of the other actors in the 2000s? Did he have drug issues and stuff?
I thought it was drinking. Was it
drinking? Because he's had a heck of a bit of a career renaissance in recent years with the Planet of the Apes and Star Wars and Zombieland and the Hunger Games and I've always enjoyed Woody on screen. I think he's a pretty decent actor. He's good on screen, so good for him, man, to have a bit of a career renaissance.
He's come a long way from Cheers, that's for sure.
Yeah, and what was White Man Can't Jump was one of his first starring roles, and
him and Wesley Snipes.
Yeah,
he would pretend Wesley would pretend that he would pick him out of the crowd. Look, this white dude, I'll play with him. Put money on the table, and then they'd kick their asses.
Yeah, they were like hustling people and stuff. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. But good for Woody, man. He's had a nice career comeback over recent years, so good actor. All right, well, let's do a little bit of news before we preview next week's film. There's not a whole lot to talk about, but early reactions of Dune has hit as it was premiered at the Venice Film Festival, and reactions go from saying it's great to saying it's a bit pretentious and okay. There's already Dune fans that are apparently picking apart the story choices made this is one of those hardcore group of fan bases that, you know, you're not going to please them all. But overall, fairly positive. I'm still going to watch it when it hits HBO Max in October, and that's all that matters. You know.
Same here.
So. Yeah. Ditto.
DC's next animated film is Injustice, which is based on the popular – they're not based on the video game. It's based on the comic book line where Superman is tricked by Lex Luthor to kill Lois Lane, and it sets off a chain of events. It's coming out pretty soon, like in a few weeks from now, in October. I'll always enjoy the DC animated movie, so I'm looking forward to that one. A different take on the DC mythos. More movies have been pushed around. Ghostbusters got pushed back 1 week, and it feels like we're never going to see Top Gun Maverick because it got pushed back to May of next year, and Mission Impossible 7 moved from May to, I believe, late August, September of next year. It's just like, I get these are investments and stuff, but, you know, we're almost a year and a half into this. Just put the stuff out on day-and-day releases. Make your money. And that's the crazy thing about Black Widow. You know, I know Scarlett is suing, you know, Disney and all that, but man, the movie still made a lot of money. You know, Black Widow is going to break even and then some. So it's not like it was a failure, you know. So it, you know, and let's be honest, was Black Widow really going to make $300 or $400 million Captain America money even if it wasn't theaters? Probably not, you know. Yeah. So it still did well, you know. So I don't know. Eventually I'll see Top Gun Maverick. But one movie that I will see if it still comes out in theaters a month from now like it's supposed to, and that's James Bond, No Time to Die. New trailer hit this week, and man, that's a really good trailer. I know you watched it, Matt. Did you watch the new trailer along?
Yeah, in the theater.
The No Time to Die trailer?
Yeah.
Wait, well, no, the theater. No, it didn't show today, but there's a new trailer that hit this week, and it's a really good trailer.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
Man, I am.
Yeah, I saw it. I don't know. I'm a little neutral.
Wasn't it supposed to be out? Like, was this another one supposed to be out over a year ago?
Yeah.
It was last March or April.
Early October. It was going to air like in a few weeks from now, and then they pushed it back even more.
Well, no, right now it's still scheduled for October. They haven't pushed it back again yet.
Yeah, oh, I thought so they pushed. See. Maybe I'm thinking of a different film.
No. Yeah, so we'll see. Well, that's it for news, man. It was, like I said, kind of a slow week. But let's preview next week's movie. It is Matt's birthday on September 11th.
Yes.
So it's Matt's birthday pick. And we all know when it comes around for Matt's birthday pick that we might get something that's like we cringe at. As he made us watch the last Action Hero. I don't cringe
it. You're cringing it.
Yeah.
I'm not cringing this one as bad as I was the last Action Hero. That was that one was hard to watch again. But so Matt has chosen to do Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Do you swing?
Are you kidding, baby? I put the gar in Swinger, baby! Yeah!
Austin Powers.
Crazy, baby, yeah!
Is back!
Yeah, baby, yeah!
With the help of the beautiful Felicity Shagwell.
How does that feel, baby?
Lower.
How does that feel, baby?
In a thrilling adventure of intrigue, treachery, and love. But Dr. Evil is back! And more evil than ever.
I'm gonna cry,
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' mojo. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm about to travel through time. I bid you adieu.
A bombshell with a secret. Robin Swallows.
Swallows? That's an interesting name.
Maiden name Spitz.
Well, which is it, baby? Spitz or Swallows?
Dr. Evil, we began a program to clone you. He is exactly like you in every way. 1/8 your size.
I shall call him Mini-Me.
Mini-Me! Something small, something deadly.
baby.
Mike Myers.
What are you, some kind of freak?
You mother.
Heather Graham.
Move over, Rover. This chick is taking over.
And Mike Myers.
Surprise, surprise!
In the biggest Austin Powers adventure yet. The spy who shagged me.
Great plan, Einstein.
All right, zip it.
You can't...
Zip.
It's simple.
It is too high, bring the wall. Meet our hero at all. Subtitle, zip it.
Found.
Zip it.
This...
Zip it. Zip it. Oh.
You know...
Zip it. Zip it.
So, probably a lot of... sex jokes and weird jokes and stuff will be talked about on next week's show. As we talk this parody of the James Bond films, essentially, when they came out in the late 90s. It was kind of late 90s, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe so. I think it was 99 was the first, or 99 or 2000 was the first one. Then the second one was like two or three. Because I remember they kind of, like the trailers had like an Attack of the Clones joke or something, so I want to say it had some, you know, there were some Star Wars references. So yeah, so starring Mike Myers, of course, and who's the female in this one?
Elizabeth Hurley does start off at the beginning, but it goes to
right.
Heather Graham.
It's Heather Graham, okay.
And then Rebecca Romijn.
Say Heather Graham, bro. Name.
Yeah, it
you'll,
is.
You'll get to summarize it.
Yeah.
Yay. <Next week.
laughs> So we will watch that on. It's they're all on Netflix.
Hey, don't forget Amazon. About Roadhouse.
Oh, that was last year. It was last actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roadhouse is like.
That's still.
It was a bizarre movie for sure.
Yeah, where he just rips the guy's throat out of nowhere. I'm like, wait, what? So bizarre.
Roadhouse.
And hippie Sam Elliott. Ah, jeez. So that's next week as we celebrate Matt's birthday as he turns 13.
at least we're watching an intentional comedy and not
and they're all on. I think all these are on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something. I know they're all streaming. So that's next Powers. Week's show.
Yeah,
but until then, theRebelRadioPodcast.com, of course, for all your needs. Just continue to stay safe out there. We thank you for listening, and hopefully for an hour every week we bring some fun into your world is what we try to do on this show in the world that, let's all be honest, kind of sucked the last year and a half. So, you know, trying to bring some fun into it. But until next time, like I said, thanks as always for listening. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the ape revolutionary. I don't know.
Ape revolutionary.
Until next time, remember, as always, just go there and do it.